Radio Prague News. The Czech Prime Minister is in New York drumming up support for the Czech Republic's UN Security Council bid. Figures released by the Interior Ministry on Monday suggest that over a half of children raised in Czech children's homes will go on to commit a crime. And architect Jan Kaplitsky warns that other famous architects will not want to build in Prague, following the turmoil surrounding his plans for a new National Library building. Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek and Environment Minister Martin Bursík are in New York on Monday, drumming up support for the Czech Republic at the United Nations. On Tuesday, there will be a vote on which country should gain a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council. The Czech Republic is eyeing the post, which would span a period of 2 years and start in 2009, but is up against Croatia in Tuesday's vote. The Czech ambassador to the UN, Martin Paloš, has said that he is cautiously optimistic about the Czech Republic's chances. These sentiments have been echoed by Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg. Over a half of children raised in Czech children's homes will go on to commit a crime, suggest figures released by the Interior Ministry on Monday. The figures come from a study commissioned by the ministry and look at around 17,500 children over a period spanning from 1995 to 2004. Interior Minister Ivan Langer reacted to the statistics by saying that the current system was not working and that children raised in such homes were not being properly integrated into society. The study criticised what it called the fragmented system of care for children in the Czech Republic. It also concluded that the childcare system was too bureaucratic. The government has promised to draft new legislation to tackle the problem by the end of the year. Czech-born architect Jan Kaplitsky has warned that other world-renowned architects will now be wary of undertaking projects in the Czech Republic, following the turmoil over a proposed new National Library building on Letná Plain. He made the comments during an interview on TV Nova on Sunday. Plans for a new library building designed by Mr. Kaplitsky have been halted in response to growing opposition from city councillors belonging to the Civic Democratic Party. The project's opponents have a majority in Prague City Hall and could easily scupper the project. Czech President Václav Klaus played host to the British Princess Royal, Princess Anne, on Sunday evening. On the menu was traditional Czech fare, including duck and dumplings, said one of the president's aides. Several other dignitaries were invited to the dinner, including the Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, who is, genealogists say, a distant relative of the princess. Princess Anne arrived in the Czech Republic on Sunday and will be in the country for 3 days. On Sunday, she watched the Velká Pardubická steeplechase in East Bohemia, and over the next couple of days, she's expected to pay visits to schools, homes for the elderly, and Lani, another one of the Czech president's residences. Now to the weather. Monday is set to be strangely unautumnal, with temperatures reaching up to 17 degrees centigrade in parts of the country. The rest of the week is looking chillier, with temperatures ranging between 8 and 14 degrees. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek flies to New York to lobby for a Czech seat on the UN Security Council. Princess Anne arrives in the Czech Republic and attends the Velká Pardubice steeplechase. And in this week's One-on-One, we speak to composer Aleš Březina about Martinu, film music and a new opera based on the life of Milada Horáková. All that and more in today's programme. Stay tuned. The Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek set out on Sunday on a diplomatic quest to New York, together with Environment Minister Martin Bursík. Their mission is clear: to make sure that on Tuesday, when the General Assembly of the United Nations votes on the 5 new non-permanent members of the Security Council, 2/3 of the 192 UN member countries support the Czech Republic. Jan Richter discussed the Czech chances of winning the post with Josef Jelinets, who was foreign minister on the one previous occasion that the country was on the UN Security Council in 1994-1995.
I think the chances are quite good. We have support of most of the European Union countries, which is important for the credibility of the candidacy. And I hope that our diplomacy worked well during the campaign. We also have some experience with the campaign and with the work as a non-permanent member of the council. In the beginning of the 90s, we successfully won the contest, and I think for a big number of the countries, this means also some reference, some type of recommendation that we successfully acted as a member of the council.
Do you think that the anti-global warming speech given by President Václav Klaus at the UN could hurt the Czech prospects?
I cannot assess that. I hope that not. Our president is well known as a person with strange views on various things, as a, something as an intellectual provocateur. I hope that the position of the government will be crucial for most of the countries.
The other Eastern European candidate for the seat, Croatia, apparently began lobbying for the post earlier than the Czech Republic, and they secured support of some of the big countries, including Germany. Do you think that could be an important moment in the vote?
It could be, because the length of the campaign means also time for intensive discussion, sometimes even bargain or trade with other countries. It takes time. I don't understand why our diplomacy started later than Croatia. Maybe the reason is in our elections and changes of the position of the foreign minister.
Why is a non-permanent seat in the UN Security Council that prestigious? Isn't it, after all, the big countries that set its policies?
The Security Council is an important body. It's, in fact, the most important body of the United Nations and probably one of the most important in the all international organizations. Security Council decides about important things, for example, today's discussion about sanctions or not sanctions against Iran and pressure on Iran with connection with Iran's nuclear program. This is connected with a lot of other questions. The Middle East is important region. So you can see decisions of the Security Council are important. So the members who can influence the decisions are, at least for this 2 years of the membership, are also important.
And that was the former foreign minister, Josef Zelenets, and he was speaking there to Jan Richter. Neo-Nazi concerts and gatherings of right-wing extremists, as in other parts of Europe, are not uncommon in the Czech Republic. And in the past, the Czech police have been criticised for not doing enough to prevent such events going ahead. But in the last few years, say the authorities, the situation has improved. According to statistics compiled by the country's organised crime unit, the number of racist concerts has dropped, one reason why officials were somewhat taken aback by a recent report by the UN. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination suggested the Czech Republic still needed to do more to prevent neo-Nazi gatherings, urging the country to adopt a more proactive and vigorous policy. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Images of right-wing extremists gathering for neo-Nazi concerts at country pubs or halls are nothing new in the Czech media, but increasingly in recent years, the Czech police have monitored such activities with greater intensity, and police have stepped in and shut down events upon the breaking of the law. Even so, the decision to move in isn't always clear-cut. Over the years, following numerous legal run-ins, neo-Nazi organizers have become increasingly savvy, now regularly billing events as private parties, with the aim of blocking police intervention. Blanka Kosinova is the spokeswoman for the country's organized crime unit, who disagrees with the UN assessment that the Czech Republic isn't proactive enough. She suggests the survey was based on old information and new statistics say something different.
In recent years, we've seen a drop in the number of neo-Nazi gatherings and concerts in the Czech Republic. We saw 18 such events last year compared to 33 in 2004. Speaking for our unit, we feel the drop has been influenced by police restrictions. We do all we can to make sure such events don't take place. They try as hard as they can to stay a step ahead and know the law to the letter. If we can't stop the event, we at least try and complicate things for them by checking venue licences or for the sale of alcohol to minors. We monitor events closely for any breaking of the law.
Political analyst Zdeněk Zboril, a leading expert on extremism in the Czech Republic, agrees police specialists have become more effective in recent years.
I have been witness of the activity of police during minimally 4 or 5 concerts in last half of year, and I can say that they are better prepared and trained. My personal, individual experiences, I can confirm that this right extremism or radicalism is changing, mainly in this last 1-2 years, and decline.
But Mr. Zbotil also points out that the drop in the number of neo-Nazi concerts can not only be attributed to police success. Not only has there been a drop in the number of followers of racist music among extremists, in Mr. Zbotil's view, radical activists have upgraded their focus, spreading hatred in other forms, namely over the internet. Neo-Nazis have also focused their energies in pseudo-political groups, thinly disguising extremist views and racial intolerance, providing different and more complex challenges for authorities than cracking down on concerts.
And thanks to Jan Wellinger for that report. Now, Britain's Princess Anne is currently in Prague for an official visit, having spent Sunday at the annual steeplechase in Pardubice, where she handed out the trophy to the victor. The princess arrived in Prague on Sunday evening, dining at Prague Castle with President Klaus and his wife. On Monday morning, she attended a memorial ceremony at the Commonwealth Monument in Olshanske Cemetery, before proceeding to what was for some residents a very special visit to the Sue Ryder Home, an old people's home in Prague, run by Britain's Sue Ryder Foundation. Joshua Singer has more.
The princess's visit to the Sue Ryder home honours the home's important contribution to enriching the daily lives of many elderly people in Prague. The home is part of the international network, the Sue Ryder Foundation. The foundation was established in 1953 by British Baroness Sue Ryder in response to the mass suffering caused by the Second World War. The legacy of the war is something that is still evident at the home in Prague. At least one member of the home is a former Czech serviceman in the Royal Air Force. Many residents in the home have connections with England. Miroslava Tumová, as a student, was at University College London and is now a resident at the home. I asked her how she felt about the visit.
It's a great honour for us, naturally. 2 or 3 years ago, it was her brother who came to Prague. And we also wanted to see what the Sue Ryder home looks like and how the people feel. And they were so thrilled. So there was one of them, an old teacher from Prague. She was more than 90, and Prince Charles wanted to know when he heard that she was a teacher, so whether she's still in contact with her pupils and about how she feels about this wonderful home. And so we talked such a long time together that the people he was to see half an hour afterwards, so they dragged him away from us.
On her tour of the home, the Princess Royal had tea with two British women who had married Czech pilots during World War II and are now residents. She also paused to talk with the staff and managers of the home outside the construction of what is to be its new unit for residents with Alzheimer's disease. Marketa Bau is head of health and social care at the home.
It's amazing. Also, it helps the from practical point of view, it helps, for instance, attracting the sponsors. But we say that for our staff, who are absolutely amazing, and they work for really small money, less than in the state institution often. It's also great reward. And, of course, our clients were extremely excited and flattered that she did come to see us.
On Tuesday, the princess will attend the opening of a building of the English International School in Prague, as well as the handing out of Duke of Edinburgh awards to Czech participants in the scheme.
Joshua Singer on that royal visit to Prague by Princess Anne. Coming up next on Radio Prague, it's time for all the latest sports news, and that's brought to you by Ian Willoughby.
Thank you, Rob. We begin today, rather unusually, with horse racing and the Czech Republic's most famous race, the Velká Pardubická steeplechase, which was held on Sunday for the 117th time. First place in the notoriously treacherous race went to 16, ridden by Dušan Andres and owned by Jaroslav Boček. The horse's trainer, Josef Vanya Sr., said he had been confident of victory from early on.
I could see it from the seventh jump. 16 was looking relaxed when she jumped the seventh without any difficulty, and when she hit the ground, she swept the whole field aside. At that stage, the competition wasn't so great, and she had had better results against our horse Juventus in training for 5 weeks.
Josef Vanya Sr., who also trained the runner-up Decent Fellow, who won in Pardubice last year. By the way, 16 is apparently the first ever white mare to win the Velká Pardubická. To racing of a different type now, and the Czech motorcyclist Lukáš Pešek notched up his second ever Grand Prix first place in the 125cc category at Phillip Island, Australia on Sunday, in a return to the rider's great early season form. And here's what Lukáš Pešek's father, Karel, had to say after his son's second win of the season.
Throughout the whole race, he was fourth only on one lap. Otherwise, he was in first or second place. He was in first during the last lap, and he made sure he didn't let victory slip away. He was great today, he was confident and didn't make mistakes. Everything went according to plan.
And that great result for the Czech rider puts him back in contention for the bronze in the overall championship. Pešek is now just 5 points off third place. Football now, and the Czech Republic are preparing to take on Germany in a Euro 2008 qualifier in Munich on Wednesday. Qualification is very nearly in the bag for the Czechs, who would have to really mess up badly in their last two games to miss out on a place at next year's European Championship. Captain Tomáš Rosický has shaken off an injury and looks set to play. However, Czech manager Karel Brückner says he won't take any chances if he's not sure Rosický is fit.
You have to be careful. I'd never risk a player's health if I wasn't 100% sure he was fit. That may sound negative, but the player's health always has to come first.
The Czech football coach, Karel Brückner. And that's all the sport for today.
And it's now time for this week's one-on-one, and for that we're joined by Rosie Johnston.
Today's guest for one-on-one is Aleš Březina, the head of the Bohuslav Martinů Institute in Prague. Mr. Březina has spent the last 12 years compiling, annotating and publicising the work of Martinů, perhaps the greatest Czech composer of the 20th century. But that's not all he's been up to. Mr. Březina is a composer in his own right, providing the soundtracks for films such as Musíme si pomáhat, or Divided We Fall, by Jan Hřebejk, and Jiří Menzel's Obsluhoval jsem anglického krále, I Served the King of England. As if that wasn't enough, Aleš Březina is just putting the finishing touches to his first opera, called Zítra se bude, and based upon the show trial of Milada Horáková, sentenced to death by the Czech Communist government in 1950. When I caught up with Aleš Březina last week, I started by asking him whether his close work with Martinů's music had had any effect upon his own composition.
I would be happy to think so, but I have to admit that I myself started to compose music only some 12 or 13 years ago, seriously. I was asked by several of my friends to write music for their movies, and by chance it happened that my friends became quite successful film directors, and step by step I became more and more involved into composing music, and several people started to ask me, what do you write for classical music? music for concert stations. So it's just by chance. So I started this institute not as a composer, but as a musicologist. I would be happy to say that I learned something from Martinu, but I think the only thing I learned from him is a very general one. You have to work every day.
So, I mean, you are working with Martinu every day. Do you not get a bit sick of him sometimes, or does he always surprise you?
Martinu is an ocean. So you can find so many, it's dozens of works, and even now after some 12 years of directing this institute, I still discover pieces I never heard, small songs, and you can even discover pieces lost in Europe, which were lost during Martinu's escape from the Nazi-occupated France. You are surprised almost every day.
But back to your composing. You referred earlier to some of the directors that you started to work with as your friends, and a very famous one, a very successful one, is Jan Hrebejk. So I was wondering if you could tell me just a bit about your relationship between you and him being the director of films like Horem Padem and Musim Esi Pomahat, and you being the creator of a soundtrack for those films.
At the beginning of our friendship was just that we liked the same literature and the same music, and we just loved to meet each other. It was back in 1985 when we met in Prague. At that time, he wasn't accepted to study at the Film Academy, so he had a year off, and we spent almost, I would say, almost every day together. He lived in my flat, because I had a very nice flat at the Karlova Street, so in the middle, whereas he lived in Řeporie, which is quite far away from Prague, and we spent many, many times together going to concerts, going to theaters, and so at that time, he didn't think he would be a film director. He thought he would write scripts for a film, and at that time I would never describe myself as being a composer. But then he was accepted to study at the Film Academy, and he started to make short films and study films, and he was in bad need for some music, and I was the only professional musician he knew personally, so he asked me, and I recorded first as a violinist some pieces for him. And then it was quite obvious that other people from his class, such as Peter Zelenka, came to ask me to do something for their film. So I did some arrangements for Peter Zelenka's Vysací zámek, for his Mňága Happy End. And then Peter asked me to write the music for his first full-length film, which was called The Buttoners, Knoflíkáři.
What do you think, as someone who now has a lot of experience writing soundtracks, a soundtrack should do to a film? Is it a case of complementing the film or telling the story that maybe words can't? What would you suggest?
It shouldn't go with the text. It shouldn't go with the general mood. It should go against the grain, because you have the possibility to do films without music. I mean, only yesterday I saw this wonderful Romanian film, 4 months, three weeks and 2 days, which comes out absolutely without music, and that's a marvelous film. But I think if you work with music, it's much better not to do what other elements of the film are doing, not to do what you see, and so not to be a sort of supporter of what is obvious, but to go against the grain. And that's the case, let's say, in one famous scene in Musím Esi Pomáhat, Divided We Fall, where you can see the crowds lynching young Germans in the streets of a small town, and I wrote for that a sort of happy Czech brass music, and the musicians didn't know for which scene it is, so they played it out of the full, they did it with full mood, and suddenly one of them saw on the screen what is happening, that it's very violent scene, and they became absolutely scared by that, and they recorded that. After they saw it, they recorded it in a completely different way. Of course we used the first one, because we wanted exactly this funny, without any sorrows, this atmosphere. And I mean, it happens in films like Obsluhoval jsem anglického krále, that you should never, as I'm convinced, you should never do the work of someone else. You should do your own work, and the music should be an additional.
My next question's on a slightly different subject, which is your latest work, or the thing that you're still working on, am I correct? Mm-hmm. This opera about the trial of Milada Horáková, which is going to be called Zítra se bude
So the trial was for me the main subject of the opera, and I thought it's good to do it about the theatrical aspect of the trial, because they prepare that as you prepare a theater play, someone writes the words, then you have a director, then you have the actors, they have to learn it by memory, and then you have some rehearsals, and then there's the first night. And that's exactly what happened in this trial. And it was interesting to me to see how a society, which some 12 years ago, I mean, back in 1938-39, was for people like Karl Popper the incorporation of a highly developed democratic society could turn after just 12 years into a society which is not only able to accept this obvious inaccuracy and this obvious violence, but also to help to make it happen.
This opera and a lot of the films you do are very, very particularly Czech. I mean, do you feel this great sense of patriotism? You're still living in Prague after all these years. You've just made an opera about Milada Horáková, a national emblem.
I mean, I am Czech, and that's my history. And it's history of my mother, it's history of my parents, of my grandparents. And when I started to work on this opera, I asked several people from our family and then their friends about it. And they were absolutely afraid to talk on it. We are now 18 years or 70 years after the Velvet Revolution. And people who grew up during the communist time are still feeling like it's not over. And that was for me the main deal with this opera. I just wanted to, of course, one can write opera on Frida Kahlo, but I mean, Frida Kahlo is not my cup of tea. I don't know nothing about Mexican culture in the 20th century. I know nothing about Diego Rivera and his understanding of communist regime and so. So I mean, I know a lot about Czechoslovakia in the 20th century. I know a lot about the feelings of people from my family and of my friends, and I thought this is something I have simply to write, because no one else is going to do that.
Composer Aleš Březina speaking there to Rosie Johnston for this week's One on One. And that's all we have time for today. From me, Rob Cameron, and everyone here at Radio Prague, goodbye.